Welcome to episode 70 of the Family Time Q&A podcast, a show about family living with actual family members talking with each other. I'm your host, Jerry, from TheRealJerryDugan.com, and we're actually going to do something a little different this time. I'm actually on the road right now in Beaumont, Texas, for work, and so, one, I couldn't bring my family with me, and two, I basically hogged all the equipment and brought it with me, so my family can't even Skype in right now to talk with me. But I do have with me an honorary Dugan, and this is Emiliano Diaz de Leon. He is the men's engagement specialist with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. I've known this guy since at least 2011, had lots of great conversations with him, and I was just thinking about who would be a good person to chat with while I'm on the road who gets it when it comes to healthy masculinity and healthier fatherhood for the 21st century. So Emiliano, thank you for joining us. How are things going for you?
Happy to be with you.
Oh, man.
Happy to be with you, Jerry. And, you know, honored to be an honorary Dugan for the day. So I'm excited about that. So I appreciate it.
It's the loophole that allows us to include outside family members to be in the show. So Brandon's also an honorary Dugan, and so we're going to have quite a few hundred honorary Dugans out there by the time this show has run its course.
Well, I'm honored to be the second one.
You are the second one.
I appreciate the invite.
So tell us a little bit about you, tell us about your family, and then tell us about the work you do as the men's engagement specialist with TASA.
Yeah, so my name's Emiliano Diaz de Leon. I'm originally from Austin, where I live and work at the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault as the men's engagement specialist. So I've been with TASA now going on for 8 years, and also a father and a husband. My son, Joaquin, he just turned 6, and he just started first grade. And
oh, I missed that age.
It's like every moment has just been really new and exciting for all of us as a family. And so, you know, he just started first grade at a new school. And so he's adjusted really well and is just having an amazing time, making new friends and really enjoying the new setting. And so we're really grateful and really, you know, blessed that he's doing so well. Cynthia also, my wife, transitioned into a new position in a new district. And so she's a dual language coach.
Oh, wow.
The same school that Joaquin goes to. And so she's also adjusting and really enjoying her work. And so couldn't be more, you know, blessed right now in terms of how things are going for us as a family. And, you know, I think this is sort of one of those things that's really spoken to me, and really looking forward to the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah.
And to share a little bit about my experiences as a father and as a man. And, you know, just to have a conversation with you, it's always really good to connect with you.
Yes.
And so I'm grateful for the opportunity. Yeah.
What would you say is your most memorable moment as a father so far?
Oh, there's so many. That's a good one. I feel like every single moment, that it's so hard to just pull one out. I think from the moment, you know, he was born until now, it's just, I think, you know, every moment has just been amazing. Like, it was just really exciting to see him. Like, all those major milestones, I think, have been real significant for me. Mm-hmm. Very sort of memorable, you know, seeing him off to school for the first time, seeing him graduate from kindergarten, seeing him ride his bike for the first time. I mean, there's just so many beautiful moments that we've been able to share with him.
Yeah.
It's really hard to pick out one.
Yeah, I hear you. It's like, I thought I had one in mind for each of my kids. I was like, oh, I'm going to tell Emiliano, for me, you know, holding my son for the first time when he was born and he was already trying to eat something. It's like, man, that kid, he just had a house and home. But, Jacob's like 14. He's taller than me now. He's like 5'8". I'm 5'4".
Yeah.
And so, like, for me to hug him, I've got to stand on my toes, and he gets a kick out of it. So I call him my mini me who's taller than me. And he's like, Dad, I'm nothing like you. I'm like, I know, but it just sounds cool. You're my mini me who's taller than me, because I'm a short guy. And, you know, every time I give him a hug, though, I think back to holding him for the first time when he was a baby. But I also picture him when he was 6, and when he was even 3, and he spoke in gibberish to everybody. We just said he spoke Cajun. And, yeah, I think about all that in just one hug. And so Emma's 12, and with her, just every conversation, you know, that I've had with her always ends with her smiling and me doing something for her. I'd said no to like 2 or 3 times. It's like, man, I'm so weak. But holding her for the first time also, when I came back from Operation Iraqi Freedom.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And She was a crier until I held her. You know, that, you know, spoke volumes to me. So I always get choked up when I see like military homecomings or just dads holding their children for the first time. I get all choked up and teary eyed. And like, even right now, like the audience listening can't
just thinking
see
about it.
Yeah. Like my eyes are tearing up right now. And I'm like, man, okay, I got to move on. Cause yeah, I'm just going to start crying. And then Emiliano's going to have to take over the show.
Well, no, I'll start crying with you. I mean, anytime I think about any of those things, I think I have the same reaction. I think it's completely, I think, natural and to be expected for us as men and as fathers to have those very, you know, special moments with our children. I Joaquin is amazing. He's such a great kid. I feel very fortunate to have such a loving, supportive partner and co-parent. And, and that's sort of made a world of difference as someone who was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. And my experience was so different from Joaquin's to be able to have two parents. I'm constantly reminded, you know, of that. And that I think is really profound for me. And that's different for Cynthia. She was very fortunate to have both of her parents.
Oh, wow.
But for me, it's, you know, it's this really amazing experience of being able to share those moments with Cynthia and with Joaquin. And so I think every moment, I think, is try to appreciate every single moment.
Yeah, Liv and I can definitely relate. Our kids have asked us, hey, so what were your parents like with us when we were this age, or when you were this age, you know, 12 and 14, and both Olivia and I were like, we can't tell you because we're in uncharted territory as parents, even as children, because my parents divorced when I was 11 or 12 years old, and Olivia's parents split up, I think, around 10, 11 years old. And so, we just realized, wow, our kids are experiencing life in a way we never did. And it's worth working on our marriage relationship just so they can continue to have that. And then, of course, it's important for us to work on our marriage relationship because eventually mini-me who's taller than me is going to move out. And then my actual mini-me who's actually a girl is going to move out. And it's going to be just Liv and I. We're like, all right, well, who are you? I don't know. Who are you? And so we don't want to be stuck with living with a stranger. And so that's another reason why we work on staying close together. This kind of leads into the work you do with TASA as a men's engagement specialist. Tell us more about what is that, and what does that mean for everybody else who's out here? Because I'm sure this isn't just on your shoulders.
No, thank you, Jerry. I think that's a great question. The work that I do, of course, is working with rape crisis centers around the state, you know, like the Women's Shelter of South Texas, where you were previously, and really helping rape crisis centers improve. Prevention workers kind of think about how to engage boys and men around the issue of sexual violence prevention and healthy masculinity. That requires just a lot of training and technical assistance with folks on an individual and in group settings. And so sort of in a nutshell, that's what I do is work with folks, kind of help them think about developing programming and practices around enhancing those services or those programs with boys and men around sexual violence prevention. And of course, I do so much more work than that, help folks think about how to do prevention work with the broader community around sexual violence prevention. And so, you know, it's been an amazing experience. I think more importantly, I think the process of doing the work is also very much personal. And so I think, like you, I think the work of engaging men is also engaging myself in engaging the boys and men in my life. And that's the work also. It's not just professionally the work that I do for TASA, but it's also about the work that I'm doing to enhance my relationships with the people in my life, as well as the relationship with my son, and then the relationship with other boys and men in my life and my family and friends and coworkers. And so I think, you know, all of those are sort of go hand in hand. I can't do one without the other. Both of those, I think, are really key to ending men's violence against women and children here in Texas. And so I believe that we have to be able to do both simultaneously.
You've got to definitely be genuine in who you are to talk about what you talk about, what I talked about when I was at Women's Shelter of South Texas for 4.5 years. It definitely made me grow as a man. It raised the standard. And, you know, going home, talking about this stuff at home, my kids expected more out of me. My wife expected more out of me. And over time, our friends expected more out of me. And that surprised me. And so, like I was telling you before we started recording, that now that I'm not there at Women's Shelter of South Texas anymore, like I find myself, I guess, more ornery about the topic of prevention of rape and how we respond as men to victims of rape and not blame the victim, and, you know, just not look at, you know, or support pornography and, you know, just, oh man, the artist Pitbull drives me nuts. and Olivia, you know, she reminds me, like, Jerry, you got to remember you've thought differently for at least the last 5-6 years, but you even thought differently before you started working at Women's Shelter of South Texas. So you came into that role and then came out of it with a different mindset. And so she kind of reminds me that I think differently, and that kind of saddens me, because the way I think probably shouldn't be, what's the opposite of norm? The abnormal, you know, thinking of women as other than sex objects should be the normal, you know, thinking about responding to like the topic of sexting, you know, like what if you found a friend did it, you know, how would you respond? And so, yeah. You know, both as a good upstanding male, but also as a Christian male, for me, it's like, what about extending grace to the person and forgiveness and let them know, like, hey, you made a mistake. So what? You know, that doesn't make you a lesser human being or anything like that. And so, yeah, it does get you to think differently. And it also gets you hopeful for the way the world could be. And it's almost like bringing that equality for men and women together. And it's really cool. Yeah. So I appreciate
that
you do that.
And I think those are the sort of shared values that we have. And that so many other boys and men in this state and around the country, you know, share. How do we enhance those values? How do we encourage men to speak openly and honestly about their experiences with violence and what that means and how it impacts our relationships? But it also, you know, these things are really transformative. I've seen, you know, I've been very fortunate to witness your sort of transformation, you know, as well as other men who have done the work, you know, and that I think has been a real treat for me to be able to both witness and support that growth in individual men who are doing the work professionally. So, you know, that's been really important for me to support, encourage those men who are doing the work professionally, but even men who have moved on into other professions, how can we support and encourage them to continue to incorporate this, like yourself, into your professional and personal work, into this podcast, you know, and that's one of the reasons I love listening and really appreciate the perspective that you bring to the conversations with your family as a man. And I think, you know, how do we nurture that in other men, right? Like, how do I, more importantly, how do I nurture that in myself and my son, so that he's also engaging in these conversations with other boys and girls? And I think those are the kinds of conversations that you're having with your children as part of the Family Time Q&A. And so, you know, I really appreciate that. It's definitely a model for other men. I think we need more of those and to lift those sort of examples and models up.
I think you just answered perfectly the driving question that we had gone with for this episode. That was, what's our role as fathers in raising healthy, nonviolent boys? And so it definitely starts with having these conversations with them, starting at a young age, you know, not going to violence as your first response to anything, and really not going to violence, period, if you can help it. You go the Gandhi route, I guess. It is so hard to try to tell, like, somebody that violence is wrong while you're beating them up. Kind of negates the message too. So is there anything to add to that? Like, what is our role as fathers to raise healthy, nonviolent boys into healthy, nonviolent men?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think we have to start early and begin having those conversations with our sons and our daughters, and be really intentional about those conversations. And I know for me, that's been extremely valuable for me to be able to sit down and have conversations with Joaquin in a way that about his daily life and his experiences and the kinds of things that he's encountering, the sort of things that he's witnessing and observing around him that he shares with us, or whenever he engages in a conversation about things that are violent or abusive that he sees, you know, we have conversations about them as a couple with him and one-on-one with him. That has been, you know, really tremendous to see sort of his own critical thinking around a lot of these things and sort of bringing that to our attention. So we're not necessarily now having to point those things out to him, but he's really coming to us with some of those conversations. And I think he's also ingrained a lot of those things into his own play. And that, I think, is amazing to sort of witness and to observe that he's really incorporating some of these practices, you know, both as an active bystander and as someone who really, you know, fights sort of for the dignity and respect of his classmates. And so I think he witnesses that, he observes that from us. And unfortunately, those examples are really limited. And because, you know, there's so many messages that are so counter to that, that we are constantly having to, it's like a force, like we're constantly going to battle with those things. And, you know, I can only imagine how challenging it is with two kids. but, you know, we're constantly confronting those things and challenging them, but also modeling a different sort of, you know, sort of a different relationship and a different parenting style from the norm. But I think that by doing that, hopefully will eventually change and it will become the norm, so that we're not the only ones sort of reinforcing these messages. But as Joaquin leaves the house every day, you know, his teachers are reinforcing these messages. Mm-hmm. His classmates are reinforcing this message. He goes to YMCA after school program, and so the YMCA counselors are reinforcing these messages. So everywhere he goes,
it just grows and grows from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can only imagine what it's like as the decades go by and more people do embrace that. I did a TEDx Corpus Christi talk in 2013 about hyper-masculinity. Like, I remember growing up and, you know, the men in my family thinking that the way to manhood was having sex with lots of women, or the way to manhood was how much beer you could drink in one standing, or, you know, one night. And it's like, you know, what happened to the days when manhood was about, you know, raising your family, doing the right thing, being even-tempered, you know, when, you know, standing up for what was right. Did I already say that one? I might have, nope. Might not have.
That's an important one.
Yeah. And so, like, somehow just the quality of strength got perverted from doing what's morally right, being there for your family, being self-restrained. And then strength somehow became, you got to have big pectoral muscles and biceps. You got to be able to bash people's faces in. You got to be aggressive. You got to drive big trucks. And I just look at that and I think, gosh, you know, not to insult people who are into that, but if that's like the sole measure of what manhood is, it's like, wow, that is so short as far as what our potential is as human beings and as men. So, that TEDx Corpus Christi talk was about just a little pivot. What if we redefine strength a little bit to include self-restraint? What if we allowed men to actually express emotion with their family members? And, my family used to laugh at that. Like, you know, I'd get choked up watching, what was that show with Ty Pennington? Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And they would do the reveal and you see dad crying and you just turn to the right and see dad crying in the living room. That was me. And my family used to get a kick out of that. And even now, like, you know, Emma, I think I mentioned before we started recording that, you know, look up YouTube videos of military homecomings just to watch me cry as the little daughter is hugging her dad, or vice versa. You know, the child's hugging her mom, who's the service member, and I'm just bawling my eyes out. And Olivia, my wife, would share with Emma and Jacob, like, hey, you know, you got to be grateful that you have a dad who expresses himself in front of you, because there are a lot of men who don't. And then because of that, there are a lot of children who grow up never knowing, you know, if their dad cared, if their dad felt anything. Here, they have no doubt. Dad loves them because he says it all the time. He's always hugging. He's always telling them he loves them. He's expressing himself all the time. And sometimes it's funny because you don't expect that from, you know, a typical male, but, you know, it comes from him. And it's like, okay, that's dad being emotional again. But then just a couple of months ago, Jacob was talking with one of his friends on the phone, and I walked in the room and asked him if he wanted dinner and what he wanted to eat. And I was going to go prepare it and asked him if he was doing his homework and everything. And he said, yeah, okay. And before I left, he goes, I love you, Dad. And I was like, hey, I love you too, son. And I was getting ready to walk out and I heard Jacob say on the phone, yeah, I said, I love you to him. Why? You don't? And I asked him about that conversation later on because it kind of just took me by surprise. Now, when I say a few months ago, it was like last school year. So this call actually happened about a year ago. Time flies. But anyway, it was a buddy of his whose dad is a very nice guy, but this kid could not remember the last time he heard I love you from his dad. And they're the same age. And I thought, wow, you know, and you know, Jacob wasn't defensive about, you know, saying I love you to me. It was his norm. To this kid, though, it was abnormal to hear a kid say to his dad voluntarily without being prompted, I love you. And to hear the dad say it back in a non-awkward way. And so that for this kid was abnormal. And from what Jacob shared with me, it sounded like this kid wanted that in his life. And so that's when Jacob realized, you know, what he did have was abnormal, but it should be normal. I thought, wow, that's really
exactly. Cool. Yeah, and that is the norm also in our relationship, you know, in terms of how we express, how I express myself with Joaquin and express sort of a full range of emotions and allowing to observe and to experience a range of emotions with me. And I've been very blessed and fortunate to be able to witness this little growing emotional, you know, boy, and being very much in touch and being able to articulate and really I've worked a lot as parents to really help him articulate how he's feeling in his little body. And so, you know, communication has always been really important to us as a family, and with him, because we want him to be able to communicate that, how he's feeling and what makes him uncomfortable and what's not okay. And, you know, I'm really so proud of him when he practices, when I have had the opportunity to observe him practicing those things. Those are completely counter to what I experienced when I was his age.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't observe men engaging in any kind of emotional, anything related to their emotions.
Yeah.
And it was the emotions that I did experience and I witnessed from men were so violent and abusive and angry. And, you know, I never experienced anything different from that. So for Joaquin to be able to experience that, I think is, you know, it's both been really transformative for me to be able to, I think in this relationship with my wife is to be able to be expressive in that way and that she really values and appreciates that and understands that that's part of my strength as a man and a husband and, you know, as a father. I think that is important to nurture in not just my son, but in other men. You know, how do we encourage them to express themselves? And when they do, acknowledge it and really, you know, value that and be, you know, kind of be with them in that, whatever that emotional experience is that they're having. So.
And for Joaquin, that's going to pay off in such big ways as he grows up, too, and gets into relationships himself. You know, just imagine for his own marriage, you know, his children, the ability to communicate with his family and you know, because that's the way he knew it. He grew up. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that's what helped me kind of go down that path, too, because, I mean, I grew up in an Irish-American family, so the only emotions you showed were anger or humor, and you complained a lot. And my dad actually was a very, very nice guy. He was never abusive. I think he spanked me once my entire life, and he cried after that. The only time there were a few times I saw him cry, that was one of them. But he didn't show a lot of emotion either. And yeah, I spoke to my mom recently, and she had shared with me that, you know, she's amazed that Olivia and I share our affection openly. And she's amazed by that because she shared with me that she never had that with my dad. And I thought to myself, that's probably why you guys got divorced, you know, like, because she left thinking my dad didn't love her, and my dad 100% loved her. He just didn't know how to communicate it. He had an idea of how you communicated that, and that was, you know, you bring home the bacon, you never hit her, you say nice things about her, you know, once in a while. But, you know, he never, like, on a continuous basis, remind her that he loved her and do things to show that he loved her and make her feel loved, basically. And so one day, she left.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, how many men do I know that have seen that in their own marriages, seen that in their own, or can say that about their parents growing up. And I don't know, something allowed me to ask myself, is there another way? There's got to be another way.
Yeah.
You know, this shouldn't be the way life is. And I think I was very fortunate to be able to recognize examples of long-term loving relationships and see the impact it had on their kids. So I had friends whose parents have been, you know, married forever. And I remember a girlfriend I had in high school, she actually was in a foster home, but the foster parents have been married like 30 plus years. And then I got to meet the kids in that family who were all adults. There was just something different about them compared to my own family that had very dysfunctional families, lots of divorce, lots of abuse. And I thought, wow, you know, the Dugans in California are very different from this family in California. There's got to be something there. And then I ran to another family a couple of years later that were like that. And I just thought, you know, I'm seeing example after example of what healthy family relationships look like. And then by the time I met Liv, I'd already determined I want that kind of family, not what I grew up with, but I want to rewrite my family history. I want to replant the family tree and make it grow differently. And so it was a decision I made around the time I met Liv, and she was on the same page. I mean, we're like any other couple. We have our arguments.
Yeah.
We have our struggles. That's life. I think the difference is because I'm allowed to express myself through other means than just anger and, you know, blowing things off. You know, we've actually been able to communicate and get down to root causes and work together to solve things. And we allow our kids to see us do conflict resolution.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, and gosh, they do conflict resolution better than I do. It's just like, They didn't. Yeah. I think they learned what not to do from me enough that they're like, all right, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
Do what mom does. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, I really believe that as a result of everything that we do, I think Joaquin is inheriting so much a wealth of knowledge that I just didn't have when I was his age. You know, I mean, I think that just I'm looking forward to just continuing to see the kind of as he develops, the kind of relationships that he continues to have and how he is in those relationships. And, you know, and Cynthia is part of that. It's just an amazing mother, an amazing partner. I'm really fortunate to share this sort of journey with her. And I've learned a lot. I mean, it's, you know, the list is pretty long from her in terms of just about, because her experience was so different from mine in terms of having both parents.
Yeah. And so that's
contrast. You know, growing up in a very loving, safe, you know, sort of nonviolent home, and you, like you said, the struggles are real. I think that, you know, every relationship has its issues, and part of what has been so effective, like you said, is really the ability to communicate and to share. And we, you know, as we've been together for a long time, the process have really grown a lot closer and really strengthened our ability to, like you said, to resolve issues that come up or conflicts in a way that is so different from anything that I've experienced or witnessed in my life. And, you know, it's like he really wanted those things. I was very fortunate to find, you know, such an amazing partner that really is willing to share in, you know, this life with and the responsibility of raising Joaquin. Yeah, I mean, I can't even find the words to describe how blessed I am in that way, you know, because I never thought I would sort of be, you know, with you having this conversation. I probably at the time when I was a kid, I could never fathom this. You know, I didn't even think I was going to be alive. You know what I mean? So, yeah. It's so, you know, and I'm learning as I go. I make all kinds of mistakes, and I'm learning how to be more responsible, you know, when I make them. And, you know, just to be really honest and vulnerable, and I don't have all the answers, and I'm not all, you know, I don't always do it right. And, you know, this is all new territory for me.
Yeah.
And so we're both learning as we go. And so I find real value and appreciate that, you know, that, and I hope Joaquin, I know that he's witnessing, experiencing all the things, and I want it to be the most nurturing, safe environment that it possibly could be. I feel like, you know, we're able to give that for him. But I'm also really aware that that world doesn't exist outside of, you know, sometimes it doesn't exist on the street. It doesn't exist in the world. And how do we, I'm always thinking about how do we transform other people? How do we transform, you know, other families and especially transform men?
I think that kind of world exists wherever you are, kind of like you're the embassy of that. And like wherever I am, that world exists. And wherever Joaquin and Jacob is, that world exists. And as they connect with other people, I was just picturing like my son as a 30-something-year-old father. And then Joaquin in his adulthood, you know, the people that they'll come into contact with, you know, just talking about leaving a legacy, the kids that will see their relationships and say for themselves, I want that for my family that I'll have one day. Because, I mean, that's kind of what happened for me. My role models on healthy families came from outside of my family. So other people's families inspired me, encouraged me, equipped me to be different than what I had seen my whole life. And so, you know, basically, you're probably influencing kids and don't even know it. I'm pretty sure now, because I've heard feedback from my kids and their friends that I've impacted them and encouraged and inspired them. In fact, I'm going to do a quick little shout out. There's my son's best friend, Maddie English, has her YouTube channel, Maddie English. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. But she talks about this different world that you and I are talking about all the time. She's actually kind of like Jacob's coach with the show. So a little quick shout out to Maddie. Hearing that I'm an inspiration to his friends just blows me away. Like, I never expected that. If my life had gone the way I thought it would, I would be about 15 years into a military career. If, you know, I'd still be alive because I'm kind of the knucklehead that runs towards gunfire. And in training situations, I was always the guy that pushed the red button or tripped the tripwire. And so, miracle, I came out of combat alive. And so, to go to multiple tours, I probably wouldn't have been alive today.
Yeah.
You know, to be where I am today, doing a podcast, talking with you, seeing my son grow into a young man, it just blows my mind. You know, being on the parent side of the high school experience, it's a blessing to be there and see it. And at the same time, it's like, really, I've become that old. Like,
That's real. Yeah, I know that feeling really well. I'm looking forward to every single moment that, you know, you've had with your son and your daughter. And it's one of those things that I can't believe he's six and he's in first grade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really crazy. And I'm just really excited about every single moment that I get to share with him. And like I said, I was telling you earlier, those milestones are just been really amazing. From those experiences, witnessing men, both abusive and alcoholics and drug addicts and very irresponsible and not safe to be with or to be around. I can't be that. You know, my experience of those things is way too painful and traumatic that I don't want to share that. I don't even want my son to know about the sorts of things that I experienced and witnessed and sort of did as a young man. And so I think that's hard, you know, and I hope that he continues to be exposed to really healthy, loving, you know, people in his life. But I also understand as a father that I have a responsibility to expose him to those people, to those examples, to those models. You know, those messages are starting to creep in from other boys and men in his life. And so I have to constantly, you know, sort of reinforce and have conversations with him and be really open and available so that when he is getting those messages and they're very strong and they're coming at him from everywhere, that he also has the skills to be able to understand and to respond to them in a way that is respectful and really counter to those messages that he's receiving. And not just part of the way he acts and the way that he is. Because I know that those things had a profound influence on me, and I'm still trying to strip them from my life, right? To really understand that those things are really toxic. Mm-hmm. Those are the toxic parts of my masculinity that are still very much with me. And I'm just slowly stripping those things away because I know that, you know, those are things that I learned and I was conditioned and trained, you know, like you said, in the military, your experience is sort of the same sort of training of masculinity that we as men receive from a very early age. And so I'm just slowly stripping those things away. You know, our transition, one of the things that I think has been really profound over the last year for us as a family is, you know, we just transitioned into a plant-based diet and
yeah, I noticed that.
And being, you know, being vegan and really, it's one of those experiences where you think about violence against people and the earth and like animals. And I think to now that not be a part of that anymore, I think is really profound for me. And I think it's given them a very different perspective that I've never had in terms of how we, you know, where we get our food and how that impacts the earth and how it impacts animals and how it impacts humans, other humans. And so I think that like Cesar Chavez, his sort of like Gandhi, his tenets of nonviolence were very much rooted in his veganism and as well. And so that has been, you know, that's sort of a profound example for me. And, you know, and that's just a different perspective that I feel very fortunate to have and to be able to share with my family that and to be able to have a son who from a very early age, 5 years old, transitioning into a plant-based diet and being vegan. That's such a different experience than I ever imagined I could have and how that impacts not his just relationships to people, but his relationships to the earth and to animals. And I don't know, that's, you know, something I'm still trying to sort of, you know, we transitioned a year ago, and so it's, you know, that's been really profound for me. But I think, like, how do we practice nonviolence and how do we not just have nonviolent relationships with our, you know, with our partners and our children, but how do we actually practice nonviolence in the way that we walk through this world?
It takes drinking the Kool-Aid meaning to like a whole new level right there, because you're not just like walking the walk, you're not just talking the talk, you're eating it too in a sense. Like, you know, the only thing being harmed is plant life, poor defenseless plant life. Right. And thank you for sharing that too. We probably do need to wrap it up. Now, I know you do speaking that's available through your website, EmilianoCDiazDeLeon.com. And I'll put that link in the show notes because that's a hard one to spell, especially if you're driving right now.
Thanks, Jerry.
And so, be sure to go to therealjerrydugan.com/070, and you'll find the links to everything I'm going to have Emiliano share, as far as how can folks get in touch with you to book you to speak at their company, school, men's group, or other organization. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, definitely through my website. So I appreciate you sharing that, Jerry. And of course, on Twitter, folks can contact me directly or follow me. Folks can find me at EC Diaz de Leon. I try to share any things that are related to healthy masculinity, healthy fatherhood, healthy sexuality, you know, healthy living. Sort of, I try to share a sort of a range of, you know, topics. Definitely encourage folks to follow me and just engage with me on social media, on Twitter, and definitely go to the website and read some of the blog posts and share stuff from my site. Like, if there's anything that I can help people think about.
So the website, Twitter, do you have a Facebook page? You don't have a Facebook page.
I have a personal Facebook page, and folks are always welcome to come and follow me. It's a lot of the same content, but I definitely encourage folks to follow me on Twitter, and I appreciate you, Jerry, sharing the website with folks. And,
oh yeah, my pleasure.
I hope folks appreciate the writing, and I really have enjoyed your writing and your website, and especially this podcast. So like I said, I'm just really grateful for the opportunity to visit with you and to catch up and to have this conversation.
Yeah. But we should do this more often, actually.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun. Yeah. It'd be great to, I'm sure there's so many more things that we could talk about.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. There's so much that could be talked about. Again, all the links that we talked about, you can find them at therealjerrydugan.com/070. And if you liked what you heard today and you thought of that one person during this whole episode, like, oh, you know what? So-and-so needs to hear this episode and listen to it and share it. Then that's the best way you can support the conversation that Emiliano and I just had. And that's share it with a friend, share it with a coworker, a family member. You can just send them the link, therealjerrydugan.com/070. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again on episode 71. Bye.
Yeah. Thank you.